This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Wentworth Kings Meadow, the show that follows the fantastic Chelsea FC women's team. Historically, visits to the King Power Stadium to take on Leicester City have proved rather fruitful for the Blues. However, on the back of an international break and a defeat to Manchester City that have blown the title race wide open and seen Chelsea kick off in second place, you could have forsaken a few nerves come kick-off. It was Chelsea who breathed the biggest sigh of relief in the first half as Southampton could only parry a shot into a dangerous area but watched on as the rebound rolled wide of the post. The miss seemed to spark Chelsea into life, and after Leicester failed to deal with a corner, Nathalie Bjorn hooked a shot into the corner of the net for her first Chelsea goal. One became two shortly after Maya Ramirez hunted down an isolated Leicester defender, winning the ball back on the halfway line, advancing into the Leicester box and calling round him the Leicester goalkeeper, slotting home her first WSL goal. In the second half, Chelsea kept the boxes at arm's length, showing their superiority in flashes, once with Jelena Tankovic producing a perfectly weighted pass into the path of Johanna Ritson-Cambridge, who shot deflected past the helpless Kopp and into the net. But Sunday night belonged to just one player, playing her first competitive minutes since 2022 and her first ever minutes for Chelsea. Caterina Macario came onto the pitch and sealed the win with a cherry on top, scoring on her Chelsea debut. And the title of tonight's show is Wentworth Kings Meadow episode number 123, is Return of the Mac. A hat tip to my own title, Kings Meadow Chronicles, we'll get into later, of course. I am your host, Dean, of course, joined this evening by Mr. Dane Whittle. Dane, good to see you, mate.
Yeah, good to you. How are you?
Not too bad. Yeah, getting there. If I'd have had an extra 5 minutes to do the notes, it would have felt a bit better. Although I've got part one down, so we'll see how part two goes. Let's mix things up. Who we got on the show tonight, Dane?
We've got... last time I was on... Was it the last time we got Rich, who was on last time with me, but I don't know if he was on the show last time. Who did you have on with you last time?
I was on with you and Sophie last time.
Oh, was that the last show you've done?
Yeah, that was after...
Rich
done. Yeah. I think that was after the Everton game. Oh, no, it was the Cup game against Palace, wasn't it? Because it was just before Man City. It was, wasn't it?
And who have you had on since, Dean?
I had Simon and Matt.
Richard's becoming quite regular now. And we've also got Chelsea Fancast Royalty, as they like to say, the housewife's favourite. Is that correct? Clayton Bierman.
It's the housewife's choice.
Housewife's choice.
But thank you for mentioning it. Good to be here. Been too long. Nice to be back.
Yeah, that reference is far too old for Wentworth Kings Meadow.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah, stay firmly on the Chelsea Fancast.
The older listener.
Yeah. Of course. Remember, you can listen to the show live whenever we record, which is normally Tuesday and the occasional Friday, by heading to Mixlr That's mixlr.com and searching for Wetmore Kings Meadow. You can join in the show by posting on the live chat page. We've already got Ben and Johnny in there this evening. Now, if you are listening on the Wetmore Kings Meadow platforms, please make sure to leave us a nice 5-star review, as it helps people find the show and makes us look good as well, me in particular. Now, on the show tonight, in part one, we're going to review the win at Leicester City. And then in part two, we're going to look ahead to the Conti Cup semi-final with Man City, which take place this Thursday. And we're going to do all that after this. Let's just get right into it then. Chelsea lining up for this one in a 4-2-3-1 with Hannah Hampton in goal. Yves Perisse, Jess Carter, Nathalie Bjorn and Neve Charles as a back four. Aaron Cuthbert was partnered by Sherkin Liskin in the midfield with Johanna Ritten-Kamrad, Jelena Cankovic, Guru Wrighton supporting Mayra Ramirez in attack. Emma Hayes used all of her available substitutes, bringing on Sophie Ingle for Aaron Cuthbert at half-time. In the 72nd minute, she brought on Katerina Macario, Frank Kirby and Aggie Beaver-Jones for Ramirez, Nuskin and Wrighton. And then in the 79th minute, Mika Hermano came on for Johanna Ritten-Kamrad. That left Sachira Misovic, Anne Katrin Berger and Melly Leupolz as unused subs for this one. Stats-wise, Chelsea had 50% possession, 20 shots, 10 on target, 9 corners and 11 fouls. To Leicester City's 50% possession, 5 shots, 4 on target, 2 corners and 7 fouls. And Clayton, it's been a while since you've been on. And on this show, we love to talk about goalkeepers. And obviously, as you were one yourself, we seem to have settled on Hampton. So I'd like to get your thoughts on her and what you've made of her performances since she's come into the team.
I think she's been great. I think she's been really, really good. I think that it's another Emma Hayes masterclass, isn't it? We thought, why are we stockpiling with even more goalkeepers? Because I think we already had purchased, and I've forgotten her name, the Austrian goalkeeper, before we bought Hannah Hampton. So we had 4 goalkeepers on our books at the beginning of the season. Obviously, Musso had a fantastic World Cup, and you thought the place was, or the position was hers to lose. And in my opinion, that's exactly what she did. She didn't actually, whenever she played, probably a bit harsh, but I don't think she nailed down the spot. Obviously, AKB has not been seen since Arsenal. And I don't expect we'll see her again. And I think it was quite interesting that Hannah Hampton came in, which nobody saw. Everybody thought would just be a one-off. And apart from the occasional game, I think it's been the cup games, she's cemented her place and I think she's excellent. I think she exudes confidence. I think defence is confident in her. And yeah, I'm very happy. I really am. I think she's a top-class keeper.
Yeah, she's shown sort of the ability on the ball sort of that Musovic has and the shot-stopping as well. She sort of seems to be bit of the perfect blend we've been looking for in our goalkeeper. And although it's taken away our opening question, hasn't it, Dane, about who's going to start in goal, it's nice to be settled, I suppose.
Yeah, like I echo everything that Clayton said. She was she came with a big reputation. I hadn't seen much of her, but what I had seen, I was impressed with. Again, I don't, who was the goal, is it Everard? Was it Everard?
Yeah,
was Everard, that correct? Yeah. She wasn't, Clayton said Austrian, wasn't she? Belgium?
Oh, yeah, she's Belgian, yeah.
Apart from not remembering her name, getting the country wrong, I was spot on.
You knew there was another goalkeeper, yeah.
It was, so it was a strange sign in Hannah Hampton. I don't know if it just came out of the blue or the fault of someone else maybe getting her. You know, we've seen some signings over the years that, you know, especially the men's have done, come to mind with William, them not wanting him to go to Tottenham. But so it did come out of the blue, and you wondered how much time she was going to get. It took a while for her to get going, didn't it? And then once she's got in, you know, she stayed in. She's been very impressive, you know, with her hands, with her feet. She conceded just the one goal, I believe. Is that correct? Is it just the one goal she's conceded against Man City, or is it? Or she can.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there is one. Yeah, no, that might be the only one.
No, it's good.
Champions League.
Yeah.
Real Madrid. Yeah.
But I just, even the defence look, you know, the defence are halfway there when they have confidence in their keeper. And you can see the defence are very confident. And for such a young goalie as well, she's coming straight away with a smile on her face. You know, you see the early interviews singing the Chelsea songs, really settled in well. And it's nice to see. And obviously you've got the group and the family sort of style of how they're integrated into the squad. And as Clayton also said, you know, it's a masterclass because she didn't go, it took a while for her to get in, like most of Emma's signings, probably about a good three quarters of her signings. But once you get in, if you perform, then you stay in.
Yeah, I mean, Ben just makes a point on Mixer about having problems at Villa before she came to Chelsea. And there was some noise, Rich, about that, but I think she was injured as well. But, you know, sometimes you're not happy at a club. You know, you move to somewhere where you settle really quickly and you can play your best football.
Yeah, I can't remember what happened exactly at Villa, but I know it was at the start of last season. But then by the end of it, she was back in the team and playing regularly. And I think whenever I caught an Aston Villa game, I was sort of fairly impressed with her, especially with the distribution out from the back. I mean, she used to do quite a lot, and she could do it with both feet. This clip ball over to like the fullback on either side of the pitch, and it would always float over like the opposition winger's head and land at the fullback's feet almost perfectly every single time. And thinking, you know, as a goalkeeper, you could pick that ball on the sixpence, you're already, you know, going towards their midfield or down the channel, down that side, just from that. But yeah, she's come in and yeah, she's really impressed. And you know, it does look like it's hers to lose at the moment. We've had the goalkeeper carousel for absolutely ages, but it might have stopped now.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was an FA Cup game where she was not in the Villa squad and she sat in the West Stand.
Yeah, I think it was the league game because we played them earlier in the league last season at home. I think it was like a 3-1 win, and then she came down of her own volition. I don't think she was supposed to be there. I thought that was the report at the time. No, she was obviously preparing her move.
Yeah, showing her interest.
Getting used to King's Meadow. So,
yeah. I suppose, Ben, I'll come back to you because, you was at the game at the King Power Stadium. And Leicester have been one of the clubs that have used their men's stadium for all of their fixtures. What was sort of the atmosphere like there? Because I don't think it opened the whole just one stand, isn't it? But
yeah,
it's sort of something that works for them.
Yeah, so I think at the moment, I'm trying to remember. I think the side of the pitch that the camera was on was on the side where the fans were, from memory, where the King Power sort of lies there, stands up. Most of that stand was full. I think it was half. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't see what was on. So we were on the right hand side, the Chelsea fans, and then on the left hand side of the tunnel, I think, were the Leicester fans, but I'm guessing there was a lot of Chelsea there as well. I mean, it was pretty good sort of atmosphere in the ground. A lot of obviously noise made by us. I usually stand at the back with a few, you know, of the people we sort of know. So Sophie was back there as well. And then we obviously had Basil sort of running up and down, you know, it's one of those good grounds where he's got a lot of, you know, space to kind of sort of run around. You know,
leg room.
A lot of noise, yeah. So, yeah, no, the atmosphere was good in the ground. I don't know how it came across on TV, but I thought it was good from where I was.
Yeah, you could hear Chelsea I was watching on Sky. You could hear Chelsea supporters. Helps when you've got Basil covering the length of the pitch. Definitely could play fullback for Chelsea, could Basil. Dale, as I mentioned in the intro, you know, we come on the back of this game in international break, lost to Man City, were second in the table at kickoff. And it wasn't sort of the greatest Chelsea start. And to give Leicester some credit, you know, they was good on the ball and they're a much better team now than the ones that we were beating 8 and 9 nil.
Yeah, Willie Kirk has done in and come in and done well, hasn't he? And you know, I know when he was at Everton, there was a lot expected. You know, they made some quite big signings, but it just didn't work for him. He's got another chance of Leicester, and you can already see, you know, he's got a game plan, he's got strategy, you know, he's got tactics, and yeah, they looked a lot better than what I've seen in recent years of Leicester. So all credit to him. They're clearly listening to him, and even like when the goals are going in, their heads didn't drop. They were still keeping to their mentality, and they did make it tough for us. You know, sometimes when you play these games, it is about getting that first goal. Tough tackling. You know, they were being strong. Poor Mara Ramirez was getting, you know, brunt of fouls again, which is a bit of a surprise because you can already tell, you know, when new players usually come into a league, sometimes they come with what they've been used to in other leagues, so they might like go down easily. But she's not one of those players. You can tell that straight away. She's a big, strong player. So I don't know why players are not. Sorry, the refs are not like protecting her a little bit more. It's not as if we've caught her diving, or she's gone down easy, or she's come with a reputation, like I said. So it's a strange one. And unfortunately, she's just going to have to go that way for a while until I suppose the league and the refs sort of like understand her and learn that it's actually them fouling her.
Yeah, hopefully the ref has already watched this game back. She was absolutely shocking. But we'll move on from that. And Clayton, we mentioned that Leicester had the first good chance, and that we spoke about Hampton already just now, but you know, we see this against Real Madrid, her palming the ball back into dangerous areas. I suppose that's the one area we need to look at her maybe learning on, pushing it away so there's not the chance straight away for Leicester. And we did get away with that, I think.
Yeah, and interestingly, because I know that you said that the follow-up was missed, I think she got something on the follow-up. I think she saved it. I don't think it's her, and I'm not defending her because obviously you want the keeper to push it away. That's goalkeepers now. They just don't. That is what they're told to do, is to push it out, and it's a question of how they can push it out and to what angles that they can get it out. So I'm not unduly concerned by that sort of aspect. I was more concerned about the fact that Leicester at that time seemed to be running through our midfield. And they created a lot of uncertainty at the back, which, I mean, to be fair, they didn't create that many chances, but they could have scored and probably should have scored. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that's down to Hampton. I think that was down to the shape of the midfield, which I think was addressed at half time.
Yeah, so we'll get on to that. So I've got that written down, Ingles' substitution. And you know, Rich, that sort of did almost spark Charles into life, but it was thanks to Leicester that they got the goal. No one seems to head the ball in the Leicester team on that corner.
It was, I mean, I had to obviously watch this back because I missed three of the four goals in the ground for varying reasons, but I have watched it back and I've got no idea what the Leicester are doing in the box. They've let the ball bounce twice in the 6-yard box, and then Natalie's like, okay then, cheers, I'll just hook it over the goalkeeper. And you know, great for her first Chelsea goal. You know, she's come in and she's settled really quickly, and we, you know, we've really needed that, especially, you know, given we've got defenders out playing in the Gold Cup at the moment. You know, she's been a really good addition and she's played really well since she's come in. And I mean, hopefully, I don't think there was as much concern in terms of going through the middle of our defence. I thought most of the good work that Leicester did against us was kind of in the channels. I think they got in behind Neve a couple of times, including that first chance, which Hampton sort of parried out. And then saved the follow-up from Amiki really well. But yeah, in the centre of her and Jess, I think maybe starting to build a relationship together, which may, you know, may be good. We don't know when Millie's coming back, although it sounds like she's now training again, or it looks like she's back on the grass training, which is obviously great given, you know, the running we've got. She's really impressed since she's come in.
Yeah, Dane, I suppose, you know, look at this match, obviously the the highlights go to Macario for the goal, Ramirez's first WSL goal, and it's also, you know, Nathalie Bjorn's first goal, but it sort of feels like she's been here for a lot longer than the others, even though she's just arrived as well. And, you know, that shows how well she's done since coming in.
Yeah, she's really settled in well. Sort of likened her style a couple of weeks ago to Leah Williamson of the Arsenal captain. I just think it's not because I said at the time the blonde hair and the ponytail. It's just, you know, she's quite springy. She's quite agile. You know, she's got a turn of pace. She looks very confident on the ball. She took her goal really well. And yeah, it's funny how when you do make a few signings in a row, you know, one can sneak in under the radar and sort of like be hidden by the main ones. But, you know, obviously, yeah, because the Leicester manager would have known her from his Everton days, wouldn't he? Yeah. And obviously, Emma's seen something in her that, you know, encouraged her to sign. I did think we needed something at centre back just to cover whilst there's no like pressure on Millie to come back. You know, what with Magda obviously been gone now for 6-7 months. I did think we needed something else at centre back. Buchanan has for me been up and down. She looks so comfortable on the ball sometimes, but, you know, I'm still expecting more. Maybe that's a bit harsh. If it is, you know, I'm happy to be corrected, obviously, and watch her more or watch her highlights more. But I think Bourne has come in and shown a good solidness to her game.
Yeah, big fan of hers. And we mentioned Ramirez just then, Clayton, and, you know, she got the second goal. And I've written down here, it's almost shark-like in the way that she got the ball to the defender, sort of the way she curved her run, kept out of the vigil of the defender, then nicked the ball, showed great strength, great composure around the goalkeeper and into the net. You know, Nicholas Jackson should be watching that one on repeat because that was, you know, a proper striker's goal, that.
Yeah, I mean, she's really impressed since she's been here. I mean, sort of Dane made the point about settling in and sort of different leagues, different challenges. But I mean, it's quite interesting because you made the point about reputation and what have you. But I don't know. I just heard this, but I didn't realise that. I know that people thought that she'd gone down too easily for the penalty against Everton. And I didn't. I heard somebody say that another WSL player had actually said that. So I wonder whether, sadly, she's already got a reputation, because there cannot be any reason why this ref, I mean, she was fouled virtually every single time she got the ball. The fact she's strong, like Lauren, you know, she doesn't get the protection. So when she is actually fouled, nothing happens. I mean, there was a clear penalty where she was basically manhandled, and the fact she just didn't go down might be a throwback to what she was thinking about when the penalty occurred against Everton. But her goal was great. And I think that goal was a combination of her skill, her strength, and also her frustration. The fact that she was getting hacked to pieces and she just thought, oh, for God's sake, right, I'm going to get that ball and I'm just going to run. And it was great. It was really, really good. Yeah. And what was also interesting is as she was tussling, the Leicester defender was still sort of hanging on to her, trying to foul her. But she couldn't get nearer because she's so strong and she built up a head of steam. But again, the referee didn't book the Leicester player. I mean, perhaps I'm looking for too much. But yeah, no, she looks fantastic. Really good.
Yeah, I'm sure it was Esme Morgan, who's at City, I believe, mm-hmm. tweeted the video. I know some Everton players did the first one with Cambridge, but I think that one definitely was Esme Morgan. And the referee obviously seemed to... The referees seem to listen to that complaint. But Rich, was this one you saw?
No. just basically, because of the... So between the first chance that Leicester had and our first goal, not a lot happened. There was a kind of a bit of a dirge in the game where, you know, I think Leicester, you know, were playing okay and we had to like readjust. And that was the time I took my toilet break. And then obviously when I hear the cheers go up, I thought, well, it's close to half time. I might as well stay down and, you know, get the beers in for the people that, you know, I've come up with. And then the second cheer go up, I'm like, yeah, of course it's two. But yeah, just to add on to some of the comments made by the other two guys, to me, she's being reffed like Bonnie Shaw, because Bonnie Shaw gets the similar sort of treatment for Manchester City because she's, you know, so like strong and powerful. It feels like the referees, I don't know, they're, I guess I'm trying to figure the word, like maybe they're undercompensating for the fact that she, you know, how much she's getting, you know, how much she's actually getting fouled, because obviously she's so much bigger and obviously it's going to take more to obviously get her down. I thought Ramirez was fantastic. You know, she kept her cool, and then, yeah, it was a, you know, it definitely helps when that happens, which, you know, she dispossessed Tebow on the ball in midfield, and then she's away, fends her off, and then composure to go around the keeper and put it in. Yeah, it was a fantastic finish.
Yeah, I mean, the ref gave the free kick against her for the challenge on the goalkeeper, which was just a completely fair challenge because the goalkeeper overcooked the ball. And you could tell her frustration there. No language barrier needed to understand that. But Dana, I mean, for me, she's built for the WSL. She's going to be a huge presence for us, especially without Sam Kerr in attack, and just building round her now. You see the building blocks coming together. But what was your thoughts on her performance?
Yeah, very impressed. Very impressed. But she looks like a big, strong unit, but she's also very fast. Very good on her feet. And then once she got through, that was it. You know, you was just willing it into the net, because we haven't... Oh, again, I still believe Sam Kerr is if not the best striker in women's football. But we've all witnessed the one-on-ones with Sam. And after a while, it's like, yeah, I believe Sam is instinctively the best striker in the world when she doesn't have too much time to think about it. But we've seen the one-on-one, so I did not know what to make of it. So we're willing it on, and it was like a good first impression on me. Yeah, I've been really impressed with her. Again, you know, it's, as I said, probably repeat myself on the previous show, you know, different cultures, isn't it? Different part of the world coming over. You don't know who she's come over with, friends or family or just on her own, or, you know, in a relationship or whatever, language barrier. But, you know, you can just see how we can only guess what Emma Hayes is like and how she, you know, brings you into the group. And that's the worry about her eventually leaving. Obviously, we're not discussing that on today's show, but how well you are looked after, as we've seen going ahead of myself when Kat scored later on, and just how everyone sort of loves each other and everyone gets on, and the friend and sort of family side of that. So you can probably think that Mara has been really accepted well into the group, really looked after, and you can see it. You know, she's smiling, she seems happy. So really impressed with her at the moment.
Emma's a big fan of Spanish culture, and I'm sure she speaks Spanish.
Or probably
a bit of Spanish, which probably helps. And Clayton, that sort of 2-0, I thought, sort of killed Leicester's spirit a little bit. It allowed Chelsea to sort of control the game a bit easier, but also because at halftime, Emma Hayes took off Erin Cup, who I think was injured, brought on Sophie Ingle, and just sort of transformed that midfield a bit. I know you've mentioned that previously, but that, I think that substitution really helped us.
Yeah, I think the midfield was really interesting in the first half. It was very fluid. Everybody seemed to be doing all of the jobs themselves. As you all know from my recent article, I was extremely pleased to see both Nuskin and Kankovic playing, who I really like, both those players. And I think they create things, and I think they're, you know, I like to see them in the side, but I think that the makeup of the midfield was, we needed some stability, and Sophie provides that. And I just love watching Sophie play. I mean, it's just, she's such a class act, and she brings a calmness. And I also think that it helped us because it meant that both Nuskin and Kankovic moved forward. So we were creating just that a little bit more, but yeah, no, it was a good move. It was interesting because nobody can sort of quite work out whether Erin was injured or not, but I don't know if you saw, there was a little clip of Emma being interviewed in the sort of tunnel area after the game, and Erin sort of walked past with somebody else and was limping. Now, whether she was actually just taking the piss or whether she was actually hurt, I don't know. It looked like quite an exaggerated limp, so she might have been. I don't know. I hope not, because I think, I know we'll discuss it later, but we haven't got a huge amount of players available for Thursday. So yeah, no, it was good, and I, as I say, it was a delight to see Kankovic.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, in between your visits to the toilet and the bar, was Erin actually injured?
So I guess this was sort of, people on Twitter sort of said this after the game. Now, I didn't see her have an injury at all, like. I didn't see any sort of problem or any sign of a problem while she was playing. And then at the end, obviously, when the players come out, I didn't see her then either, because I had to rush and get a train. But yeah, I saw that. Yeah, the only place I sort of saw that was on Twitter. I didn't see anyone else report that. So, I mean, the only thing I'd say to that is, I'm guessing there's a pre-match press conference tomorrow for the Cup game on Thursday. So we'll probably find out then if she is injured or not. Hopefully not, because, yeah, we are going into that because of one thing or the other, whether it's people in the Gold Cup or in Natalie Bjorn's case, she's cup-tied with a few players out. So, yeah, we kind of need everyone available for it, I think.
Yeah, Dan, I suppose when you've got sort of Sophie on the pitch, you know, you can see her reading the game, her intelligence, but also with a two-goal lead, I mean, that's, I think, when Chelsea are the most comfortable, when they can keep their opponents at arm's length. And then, as we saw with the third goal, spring into life really quickly and really hurt opponents and just sort of settle the team down, I think, having her presence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She does screen that central part of the pitch really well, doesn't we? We've seen it for years. And then it's funny because sometimes, a bit like the goalkeepers, she'll have like a spell on the bench, won't we? And you'll think that she's slowly being eased out, and then she'll come back in and produce a couple of good displays in a row, or a good sub out in. And again, it just showed, yeah, obviously we don't know if Erin was injured or not, but she's come on and she's just calmed things down with that old style, very retro style, I think the men's team could really do with someone just sitting there, you know, like passing simple passes, kicking, spraying really good parts of the field. Calms everything down and then it frees us up. It's a nice big pitch, isn't it? So we can take advantage of that with Wright and Kanneridge and Wrighton as well. So, and that's what happened by getting the third goal? Third goal. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what happened. But, listen, you got to, you know, without mentioning the men's team again too much, but if you shoot more, then you're going to get, you know, you're going to get the deflection, you're going to get lucky, you know, that's what happens. But, you know, she was in a good position on the pitch, took her chance, got a deflection, but it helped us comfortably go 3-0 up.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Clayton, it allowed, you know, Kankovic to get up the pitch a bit more, and that was the one real moment of class, I think, in the whole match, that pass through to Kamrid, you know, perfectly in her stride. Allowed her to cut inside, obviously, her shot. I don't know where that was going before it took the deflection, but it ended up in the back of the net. But what did you make of Kankovic's performance? Because I thought she was trying maybe a bit too hard early on to try and make things happen, and maybe when she settled down a bit, when the team settled down, I think we saw the best of her then.
Yeah, I think it's a problem with, I think, any player who is not guaranteed a place in the side, that when they do get an opportunity, that perhaps they do try a little bit too much. And as I said, I mean, that three in midfield is not a midfield that has seen the light of day. So it's, you know, I'm not sure that anybody knew where they were supposed to be. And maybe Emma said, look, you know, if one of you goes forward, the other one drops back. And I just think there wasn't really much of an understanding. I think that Nushkin was much better in the second half because she was pushed further forward, because I think she, out of the three of them, struggled the most in the first half, because I'm not 100% sure that she knew what she was supposed to be doing. Listen, I'm saying that, which is complete bollocks, because Emma's the best coach there is, so I'm sure she did know what she was supposed to be doing. But yeah, but I think second half she was pushed a bit forward, and I think she was just controlling things. I mean, the ball through was class, and that's what she can do. And I think it's great to see it. And I actually thought that the move for both the third and the fourth goals were fantastic. I know we'll come on to the fourth goal, but I just thought they were great football. I just thought it was lovely, because even before the pass by Kankovic for the third goal, the way we won the ball in midfield, I think it was Sophie, and just the way it was played through, I just thought was really good.
Yeah, I suppose, Rich, I should ask you about the one goal we didn't see. Be a bit unfair not to. You know, a good Chelsea move, I suppose, and that is what, you know, we've come to see from Johanna and Cameron this year, not afraid to run in behind and use her pace, which I thought when she first signed, we didn't see as much, but I think she's come into her own now.
Yeah, a lot of the players that come in for the first time or play in their first season for us, they do have a bit of a, I guess, sort of like a slow period or bedding in period. And I think I've discussed this before about Johanna. But yeah, I don't think there's many faster players than her. So when she's running in behind at back four, I mean, you know, there's cause for alarm. And I did like the fact that she did want to cut in and shoot on the left. I know she's not really sort of left-footed, but you've at least got to, you know, when opposition teams are sort of analysing players, they've got to at least, you know, expect that's going to come. Or at least, you know, you've got a plan for it. So then you know that she's not going to always go on the right side, which I think she might have been guilty of doing before as well. But yeah, Cankovic's pass, it passes her open completely. And I think Gura did some good work in the build-up to it as well. I think she maybe sort of got around three players, and that laid off the ball to Yelena, and Yelena's just hit the ball first time. But, you know, even though the finish is deflected, it's good that she's, you know, confident enough to be cutting in and shooting on her left. Yeah, it was good to see.
Yeah, and then Dane, that obviously opens up 3-0. Emma makes the subs. You know, the moment of the match, the introduction, and the goal for Macario. 641 days out from football, you know, the whole of 2023 missed due to injury. I know you've got a bit of an American connection as well, but that was, you know, you could tell what a moment it was just for her to come onto the pitch.
Yeah, yeah, you could tell it was a moment for her, for the whole team, for fans, family. She had a big smile, didn't she? A beautiful smile. Yeah, no, not a lot about her. She's never played in America. She was a Brazilian born, moved over, I think, 11, 12 to California. Didn't speak a word of English. She served some time at Stanford College. I think she gave up her last year to go and play for Lyon. She played, I think, 20 times for the national team. Very exciting, can play attacking midfield, winger, forward. I like it. I prefer her as a forward. I still hasn't played a lot for the national team. I just said 20, didn't I? 20 times. But getting her on the field, and even, you think, was it 21 months out? No, you said 600 odd days. I didn't think any of us really knew the extent of the injury. I can even remember asking questions on that first game of the season. Oh, she hasn't even made the bench. She's struggling for fitness. So it's quite a tight ship, isn't it, behind the scenes? You don't actually know a lot of what goes on in the women's team. And Emma has kept it really strict there. Long time coming. I thought Aggie Beaver-Jones again comes on and scares players. She put a nice pass through to Katerina, a little bit behind, but she just managed to control it. You can see Fran screaming to pass it across. And she had a nice little finish. It was funny afterwards because Katerina said that Fran had to tell her to go, like, hit the space, because she said, I was feeling already quite tired already. But she's glad she did. And you could just see how much it meant to everyone then. Even when the final sub came on, Micah came on, and the first thing she did was went up to Katerina and gave her a big cuddle. And everyone just seemed so happy. You see Emma talking to either the linesman or the fourth official and just telling her how long she'd been out. And yeah, it was a really nice moment. Yeah, a little bit biased when an American player scores for us. But as I said, it's been a long time coming. That signing really excites me. I don't, without sounding ignorant, I don't think people realise how much of a good player she can be for us if she keeps fit. This is a special player with a big reputation who is really appreciated in the game. So, you know, if we can get her fit and we can protect her, I mean, with players around her, like the Sophie Ingles of the world, and if you think we could have her and Lauren James interchanging with a forward, as well as Caterina, wow, it's exciting times. It's just a shame that Emma is not going to oversee that. Initially, she obviously will for the first few months, but then she can't obviously blossom. Because I always feel with such big injuries, it could take 7, 8, 9 months until you see the best of them. But, you know, it very exciting time. So I look forward to how the new manager will come in and how they will exploit this talent that we have.
Yeah, I mean, Emma mentioned after the game, Clayton, that, you know, they didn't see the full extent of how bad her injury was until she signed. Wow. It was a big risk for the club, really, to take a player with an injury pre-standing to come in. But she said as well after the game, you know, what a player that Chelsea have got for the future. And although she won't be there, Chelsea has set up for a long time with this new forward line they've got. And she showed a few glimpses of what she's going to bring to this team.
Yeah. Are you talking to me or Clayton?
Clayton, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
You've said your piece.
Thank you.
I mean, we don't know what sort of contract that we signed her on. There has to have been something in the contract that dealt with the fact that we probably wouldn't see her for a while. I mean, she came on a free, didn't she? We didn't pay a transfer fee. Her contract had come to an end, so there wasn't an upfront payment. But as Dane said, this was a risk worth taking because she is a very, very good player. I'd be lying if I said I saw all her Lyon games because I didn't. But she came with a huge reputation. And I know that sort of people that know or knew her more than I did were incredibly excited about the fact that she was coming to us. And we've shown just throughout the years how good we are at managing players who have any forms of injury, that we won't rush them. I think we're lucky because we've got a squad and always seem to have a squad of quality players that if you haven't got one, there'll always be somebody else. So I'm very excited. I think we won't see a huge amount of minutes for her over the next couple of months because I just don't think she'll be capable of that. But what a player to bring off the bench. And as Dane said, Aggie is just brilliant. I'd like to see her more. But when you've got a team that's tiring and flagging and you bring her on, wow. I mean, you know, we're very lucky. Although you create your own luck, don't you? Sort of develop these players, buy these players, put the squad together. And obviously, sadly, Emma's going, but she's going to sort of nurture Kat back to full fitness so that she's ready for the Olympics.
Yeah, and, of course, look after her as the American national team coach.
Yeah.
Well, Rich, I know you buggered off and missed her goal, all for you. But, you know, as the lost spirit of Jessie Fleming says on Mixed League Show, she showed a great touch and decision-making. When she played in Micah for her chance, and she's going to be quality once her confidence is up and her fitness as well. We've seen that with Lauren James. You know, there's a blueprint there for Chelsea to follow.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to bring up Lauren because obviously when she first signed for us, she, you know, barely played in the first year. And, you know, it seemed to be like a thing we seemed to do in the background with regards to like sort of conditioning and bringing them sort of up to speed. And, you know, you wouldn't have thought from that sort of cameo that Mercari had been out for that long because, yeah, touch was really good. And, yeah, as well as the goal, she obviously set up that chance for Micah. You know, she there were really good sort of touches in the box and she laid it off to Micah, you know, the exact right time. And, you know, obviously exciting given what we've sort of got coming up. And obviously we don't want to overwork her, certainly not in the short term. But it's a very exciting signing and someone who has got real pedigree of scoring goals in the knockout stages of the Champions League. She scored in the final 2 years ago against Barcelona. I'm pretty sure she scored in the quarterfinals and even maybe the semifinals of that same tournament as well. So, you know, you need those sort of players in those sorts of games. And, you know, hopefully, you know, she builds up that fitness and, she, you know, she could be a more regular contributor. But, yeah, really good start. Yeah, excited. I was really excited when we signed her. I thought, I was trying to work out just because of how many forwards we've got, like, you know, when she is available, you know, where on earth is she going to go? But, you know, obviously this is why you need a big squad, because we've now got people out. So, you know, that kind of sort of answered itself, really.
Yeah, and of course, just the 7 matches to go in March. Was it 26 days and 7 games? So a lot of fixtures to play. Dan, I just want to touch on Aggie Beaver-Jones before we end part one, because, you know, every time she comes on the pitch, she makes a difference. And we spoke about Guru Wrighton a lot recently, not being herself from her injury. Should we be having a conversation whether she should be ahead of her in this team right now?
I believe so. I know others will probably disagree. I'm one who, I'm not big on reputations, because that can only get you so far. And I've seen lots of Chelsea teams picked over the years based on reputations rather than form. You know, I think, like Clayton said, you earn your luck, but also I think Aggie surprised people by going on that goal scoring run. And like most strikers, okay, that stays in people's mind. So then she'll get a chance the next game. And obviously by that happening, she then scored like 5, 6 games in a row, 7 games in a row, whatever it was. So now she's a fixture within the squad and in all our minds, and gives Emma a different choice. I like how she doesn't care about who she's playing against, whether reputation is big team, small team. You know, she's out, she's young, she's enthusiastic. As I said, she can play it probably anywhere across the back four, sorry, the front three, which is exactly the sort of forward for Emma sort of likes. You know, if we look at like the master of that over the years, Fran Kirby. I'm really exciting, as Clayton said, really exciting player. And I think that question deserves to be asked. I luckily enjoyed watching a world class probably 18 months of Guru. You know, we all have dips. Players have dips in their careers, don't they? And it just happens. You know, all the coaching staff will be there for her, but you shouldn't be picked if you're not performing. And that's the whole point of having a squad with people who can come in and do a job.
Yeah, Clayton, on Brighton and Aggie, you know, I don't think this was all Guru's fault in this game. You know, at times, I don't know if you sort of picked it up at all, but the system seemed to be a 3-5-2 with Charles the left wing back and Cameron the right wing back, and that forced Brighton inside. And just don't think she really suits her at all to play inside like that in those tight spaces. Yeah, the best of Guru is out wide. So, you know, number one, why do you think Emma's doing that? As a coach, and two, do you think that Aggie deserves a chance in this team over Guru right now?
I'm torn, because I'm a huge Guru fan, and I want her to come good. And I don't. In answer to your question, I. My perception was that Emma perhaps is trying to play her into form, and therefore maybe she's trying to do different things to help Guru, but it's just not clicking. It really isn't, and I think it's, as Dane said, I mean, 18 months was just golden, absolutely golden. I don't think, you know, people rightly were praising Sam Kerr, and Sam Kerr got Player of the Year last year, and it should have been Guru. In my opinion, she was everything. She was creating, she was scoring, and I'm not sure. Is it the injury? Is it tiredness? I mean, World Cup. I'm not sure the World Cup gets mentioned enough, because I think there are players who are jaded, who don't look as good as they can. And I don't think that's taken into account. Honestly, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, how old's Guru? Just 27, 28, something like that?
Yeah,
roughly. I think she's definitely late 20s, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, are we saying that that was her golden period? I sincerely hope not. Does Aggie deserve to play ahead of her? I think she does in certain games, maybe not in others. I don't know. I think part of Guru playing against Leicester is, was it last year that she got like about 300 assists in the first half? So I think that's obviously a ground that because the size of the pitch and because of the width, that it was perhaps hoped. And I don't know if she would have scored in the first minute, maybe things would have been different. But I'm not answering your question because I don't want to.
As a guest, we'll let you off. Rich, I mean, for me, there's been a change this season to the way the Chelsea play. And I think that is built around Lauren James being in that sort of 10 role. And we're seeing Guru come inside a lot more. And I think our best stuff's always been out wide. But if we are going to drop her out of the team, then Emma has to change the way she plays. And I think she's going to continue playing if Emma wants to play with these sort of number 10s rather than wingers.
Yeah. I've been slightly surprised that in some games that Lauren hasn't actually played on the left instead of Guru, mainly because we've kind of seen it for England. You know, she's really effective of like sort of cutting in on the right. I mean, she can do it on the other side as well because she seems to be, you know, as strong as on each foot. But yeah, I'm sort of surprised we haven't seen that sort of as much. I think she does drift in there in the games, but the big thing that Guru does have that the others don't is she is left footed, and especially with sort of set piece delivery, you get sort of like a better balance. I mean, I'm a bigger fan of in-swinging corners as opposed to out-swinging ones. And obviously, if you don't have a left-footed player on, you can't really do that from the right-hand side. And I think we do tend to do that. I do. Guru does also take the out-swinging ones on the left side as well. But yeah, I do think that she does have, there is some balance that she does bring, but yeah, at the moment, I mean, she did have some good moments to sort of reference the build-up play that she had for the third goal, because she was good there, and we'll sort of wait and see. I wouldn't start for one of the two games coming up in the cups. I would go towards someone else, because mainly because of load, yeah, that, you know, phrase load management, just, you know, because obviously we've got so many games clustered together, that I probably wouldn't play or start her at least for one of those. It does seem like Emery is going more towards, or you know, playing sort of, using more, you know, sort of players as who are central attacking midfielders, tens, a bit more, and like wanting to use those. But then there is a difference on the right hand side. Johanna has played a lot, and she's just like a pure in a winger. So maybe it's just different on each side. It's a bit asymmetric, if you will. Again, it's a difficult one to answer. It's really difficult. I do feel like Emma does adjust during the season, and then we start seeing sort of the end product now, and she's kind of worked everything out, and then that's when they sort of go. And I'm just waiting for that to to happen and to get everyone, including Guru, firing again, because it's usually what happens.
Yeah, and I suppose we won the game 4-0, so
yeah.
I don't think you can have too many complaints about what your manager sets up your team like in that case. Now, I did do a player of the match poll as usual. We had Johanna Ritten Cameron with 13% of the vote, Nathalie Bjorn with 14%, Macario was in there with 17%, although I think that should have been either Chankovic or Perisse, really, but had to put her in. The winner with 56% was Mayra Ramirez, which I'm sure we'll agree with on that one. She was fantastic up front for Chelsea. We're going to go for a quick break now. Before we do that, a reminder that the brand new issue 10 of Kings Meadow Chronicle is out now and available to purchase online via kingsmeadowchronicle.bigcartel.com. Kings Meadow Chronicle is written for the fans, by the fans, and gives you an insight into the opinions of Chelsea supporters about everything about Chelsea FC Women. It features a host of fantastic writers, including Mr. Clayton Beerman, who's with us tonight, who we've referenced. We used to have people like Dane, but we've stepped it up a gear from the early days. And of course, issue 10 featured Macario on the front cover with Return of the Mac, which is obviously tonight's title as well. So the link for all that will be in the description box, and we will be right back to look ahead at the Man City game after this short break.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to part two of Ultimate Kings Meadow. Time now to look ahead to Manchester City in the Quality Cup this Thursday at the Jouy Stadium. I think that's how you pronounce that car brand. They do car seats that my son's got. Dane, this one, is it a bigger match for Emma Hayes, who's leaving to get to the final, or for Gareth Taylor, who's just signed a new 3-year deal?
Jesus Christ, that is a question and a half. I don't think, because of how much Emma has achieved in her time at Chelsea, I don't feel that you can ask that question based and put it away. Oh, he's gone. Put it in the way of Emma Hayes. I think I remember having a chat with you on this show quite a few months back, probably 2 years back, actually, when Gareth Taylor was under immense pressure, terrible injuries. You know, they was calling for a sacking. People was talking about him being taken out. They'd sold a lot of their really good players. And I thought, they should have stuck with him. And now I wish I hadn't have said that, and they would have actually got rid of him, because he's like, he's got them playing well again. He's got them organised. I never liked playing against Man City. And it's one of those games almost like, playing Liverpool away. You just got this feeling that nothing's going to happen and nothing's going to work and it's all going to go against you. But I have that feeling when I watched this team play against Man City or Arsenal away. That's the two games I really hate. It's going back to that question you asked. I think that is a sneaky question that maybe the other two more intelligent guests can answer, because I'm dumbfoundedly in the middle somewhere.
I'll throw it over then. I'll come to you first, Rich. Obviously Chelsea lost this final last year to Man City. We've just lost to them in the league. Emma's sort of on that Jurgen Klopp farewell tour. Although this is probably the least important trophy out of all of them, you don't want to set Man City up for a start, a run of trophies by letting them get to the final of this one. But we would just say this is a bigger match for Emma or Gareth.
Thanks for elaborating more for Rich there. Appreciate that.
In terms of the managers, I think it's a bigger game for Gareth Taylor. because I know from the few sort of Man City fans that I do follow, there have been a lot of questions about him. And, you know, there have been kind of put to bed a little bit this season with obviously the position they've put themselves in. And of course, Emma's record in domestic, you know, with domestic honours, it, you know, sort of speaks for itself. And yeah, I do think it's one that it's bigger for Taylor. In terms of the teams, though, I do think it's big for us, for our sort of psychologically and for the players, because we haven't beaten Manchester City the last three times we played them. The last time we played them was right at the start of last season. And, you know, I've gone up there twice and we've put in stinkers both times. And the second time we managed to get a draw out of it. But, you know, it's one of those, I feel like it's psychologically big for us. And I know there's a lot of people, at least that I see on Twitter, who are kind of wanting to us to fob off the Conti Cup, given this is, you know, the people who are cup tied, given the people who are out on tournament football and who's injured. But I think we need to go into this strong, personally. I really think it might be big for their season, because we've had those games against City. We haven't won either of them. And then we also didn't win at Arsenal. And I feel like we do need to start winning these big games this season. That's the only thing I think that's been kind of missing. I think we've been all right apart from these. And yeah, I do think it's a big game for us, for the team on Thursday. Not so much Emma, because she's going and she's already won this competition, but I do think it's big for the group themselves.
Yeah, Clayton, what was your sort of thoughts on that? I mean, I think given the way that Man City beat us at home recently, I think it does put a little bit of pressure on Emma's shoulders, because I think Taylor outfought her tactically with the way he set the midfield up and the way they pressed us from the back. And she doesn't need to get one over him as such, but you know, going away to Man City, she has struggled historically.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with what Rich said in terms of how big this is in terms of how we have underperformed in every single big game this season. And those are the two, against Man City and the Arsenal game. You know, there does seem to be some sort of psychological block about playing Manchester City away. And I'm not sure what it is. I think City are a good side, but a very good side. But so are we. And I don't know why mentally, because, you know, you just look at the league game up there, playing against nine players, and we sort of only managed to get a draw from a sort of really scrappy 96th minute equaliser. There's something that I don't know what it is. Now, it might be that the way they're set up, and they do defend very deep and very well, that we don't create very much against them. The home game being the perfect example, and sort of being part of the reason why I wrote my article, sort of complaining about lack of creativity. I don't know. I don't know whether it's a mental thing. I cannot believe for one minute that an Emma Hayes team are mentally dwarfed by anybody, to be honest. So I don't really know. Maybe the players are sort of fearful. But I do think that we need to turn up. I know we've got huge difficulties because we've got lack of players, but I think we need to have a go. I really do. Because I think it will have a big impact in the rest of the league season, and the league's always more important.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that next day, actually. Do you think this match impacts the league at all?
Yeah, I completely agree with Clayton. It could really have an effect on it. I don't know if the next question is going to be, well, which one would you choose? League title for me out of all of them, first and foremost. I think potentially it can. I think, as both Richard and Clayton have both said, that it's, you know, they have a sign over us at the moment. You know, we don't seem to do much against them. As I said earlier, it's not an enjoyable watch. So if we can come out of this with a win or even like a really good display that might, again, that's very cliche, isn't it? Well, you know, really good display, but still maybe not the result. Yeah, I think potentially it can, but under an Emma Hayes team, you know, she's battered all these managers and teams off for years now. So I wouldn't be surprised to be, again, I'm sitting on the freaking fence. So.
Yeah, I think it was the last time we beat them there was the Conti Cup semi-final. So that may be a good omen. Yeah, but Rich, we mentioned some injury worries and that does occur in the central defence. Millie Bright obviously still not back. Nathalie Bjorn cup tied. Buchanan away at the Gold Cup. Meola's out injured. Not many options there. I think it's Carter and Luskin or Carter and Ingle, I think it looks like.
Yeah, and I think I've kind of done a little sort of lineup and I've put Nushkin next to Carter just because I think she's slightly taller than Sophie and she has had experience of playing centre-back a lot for Germany and last season at club for Eintracht Frankfurt. So of those options, yeah, obviously you'd want to have Mara in the air, but was she on the bench on Sunday? I can't remember now.
No,
there you go then. I know she had some sort of injury picked up with on international duty. So, yeah, I think it's I would probably go with Nushkin ideally as well because I'd want to see Sophie in midfield. I never feel like since City have played or since City signed Hasegawa that we've ever got a grip on her. She's always controlled the games. It feels like apart from the first one. Which was the one we won 2-0 at the start of last season. But apart from that, I really think, you know, we've got to try and limit her influence on the game as much as possible. And it's probably, it'll be our task, but I do think that's the route to, you know, getting a result or at least, you know, making this a frustrating game for Man City.
Yeah, we'll get on to that with the lineup that I think Emma's going to pick. But, you know, Clayton, obviously we know Bunny Shaw has really grown and developed in her time at City and she's now one of the best strikers in the WSL and going at her with only, you know, not even one natural centre-back. So I don't think Jess Carter's sort of grown into that position. She's not naturally a centre-back. And then obviously Nuskin or Ingle, whoever's going to partner her there, obviously naturally midfielders. Not the best time to have sort of four centre-backs injured, is it?
No, it's not. And that's obviously going to be a source of concern. We therefore have to concentrate on stopping the supply to her because there's not a lot we can do. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. But I think hopefully they'll come out more than they did at King's Meadow and we'll have more space to create chances because I think, you know, I think defensively we've got to hold our hands up and say it's going to be very tough. So we've got to score ourselves. And hopefully it'll create more gaps. But yeah, it's going to be a tough ask. But this is a team with an amazing mentality. So yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, Dave, we mentioned that WSL game at King's Meadow. Chelsea really lost the midfield. Emma went with a 4-4-2, a flat four, as she did against Everton a few weeks before that really worked against their 3-4-3. And as Rich mentioned, Hagawai was just running the show because she was free to do so. Do you think Emma's going to make that change and add a player in that midfield and go with the three there?
Well, you hope she's going to make a change somewhere for us to perform. As you've said, it's been pretty average against them the last few times based on who's available. I've been trying to write down things quickly. I completely agreed with Rich and put Nuskin at centre-back. I think that would suit her, although we have seen, obviously, Sophie play at centre-back over the years in the Chelsea shirt. You know, it's going to be hard on our defence, like Kate Clayton said, and it's going to be the old saying of we you know, score more goals and then we win. Simple as that. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, what Emma comes up with because she's going to, it's almost spinning the whole performance around 90 degrees because it has been pretty average against them. So, you know, her and the assistants and the coach staff would have been putting their minds together. And, you know, she could surprise us. She might not. It'll be interesting to see.
I think we've been pretty average for quite a long time, but we've got the results to back that up anyway. But Rich, let me talk you through the team I think that Emma might pick on Thursday, and then you can sort of tell me what you've got written down. I think she's going to do a throwback to the Champions League final run and play a 4-4-2 diamond. Hampton in goal, Perisay, Carter, Muskin and Charles in defence. Then Ingle at the base, Leopold and Cuthbert in the middle, Kirby at the top, and then James and Ramirez as your two strikers up front.
I've not put Erin in mind because I don't know yet if she's going to be available. Obviously, this is dependent on, you know, what happens in the press conference tomorrow, and we, you know, find out information if she did actually have an injury that's serious or not. So mine's left out without hers. And I've gone with Hampton, Perisay, Carter, Nishkin, Charles, it's a back four, Ingle and Leopolds. And then what I kind of want to do going forward is, and I think the approach of the game may be just to sit back and hit on the counter. So I want JRK and Aggie on the wings, and then Kirby playing as a 10, because I do think that she offers a little bit more in terms of, you know, being a pest defensively than, you know, and I think it's more important in this type of game to have that and to maybe say have Lauren from the start, and then Myra up front. And I just feel like, you know, if we can get in behind with those three, you know, the two wingers and the centre forward, I do think we can cause them problems doing that and just, you know, going kind of pure counter-attack. But yeah, I don't know how many times Emma's sort of set up like that. She set up like that away at Barcelona last season. You know, it was kind of about, you know, keeping themselves in the game for as long as possible, and then, you know, quick transitions when we did get the ball. And I kind of feel like they're probably going to do something similar here. So, yeah, that's what I've gone for, 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, Clayton, what's your thinking on what Emma's sort of... Because it's not easy to predict what she's going to do, but if you was in her shoes, what would your lineup be?
I mean, I think I think she'll possibly play Musovic in goal. That would be my only change from the sort of the back four that you've basically all gone for, because I think we're pretty limited, aren't we, with our back four, so we're not really sort of plucking much out from there. Yeah, I think, as Rich said, we don't know about Erin, but I mean, Sophie and Melly is great. I really don't know, because I think it depends where Lauren's going to play as to who else is going to play with her. And I think without sort of appearing to have a go, I'd really like Lauren to step up, because we really need her. Lauren's a game winner. And this is the sort of game where I want her to step up. I mean, I thought the whole team were very flat at home to Man City. But, you know, that for me, and I think it's perhaps the maturity thing, that those sort of games, I want to see Lauren, because she's the difference. She is world-class, and I want to see her in those sort of games do things that other players can't do. So I'm looking to her to help us, because we need somebody to do something big in this game, and she's the one that's capable of doing it. I'd really like to see her step up.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, I've gone with this diamond because I think, as Rich said, it keeps us in the game for as long as possible. You've got Ramirez's strength to hold the ball up, and Lauren's ability on the ball as well to sort of relieve some pressure. And then as the game opens up, you've got, you know, the likes of Aggie and Cameron, who can come on out wide and attack those. I think the weak City spots are out wide. But yeah, what's your thinking?
I just worry a little bit about Lauren Hemp having too much space. If you're playing a diamond formation, you're expecting Neve, who, again, is still performing massively consistently at a level that we're all was almost talking right and was, you know, for the 18 months. Neve has hit a level which is amazing. So you're asking her to do a lot against Lauren Hemp on her own. If you're playing a diamond formation, then one would have to come out to almost protect Neve. I like the sound of a potential Aaron Loopholes and Ingle midfield, but then you obviously you take away position up front, so it almost be like a 4-3-3, wouldn't it? It's a tough one because sometimes you think, well, almost like what Clayton said, you know, if we can try and get our Lauren into the game, who is a match winner, a world-class player, you overthink it, don't you, and think too much of trying to stop them, and it takes away some of your good attacking options. So it's a hard one to call. I like the fact of playing away. I actually prefer that to playing home against Man City because they will come at us more. If that gives Lauren space and my Ramirez space. As you say, you've got some good subs that can come on. I'm a lot more confident just considering how poor he was against them at home a week ago. I'm a lot more confident about it than maybe others are. But again, it will be so interesting when we see that team, when it's announced, and maybe if we've got a pen and paper and write down what we think and where they're going to go. And so yeah, if our very basic tactical minds can pick up anything, but obviously some of the great minds can and see things. But yeah, I'm not too down on this. I think opportunities. I think there's an opportunity there.
Well, we'll find out how optimistic when I ask you last for your prediction. We'll find out obviously about the team at about 6:15 on Thursday night ahead of the 7:15 kickoff. Now I'm going to go for a 3-2 Chelsea win, but that's going to come after extra time. Rich, what about you?
I think it's going to be 1-1 or 2-2. And then during extra time, we're going to sub on Anne and we're going to win on penalties.
Interesting. Bit of 4D chess there. Clayton?
Yeah, I'm going for 1-1 and winning on penalties.
I don't think I could handle that. Dane?
Well, I did have 3-2 in my head. You always seem to know what I'm going to say. I can see bloody penalties. But I don't want to say the same as Rich and Clayton, so I'm going to surprise everyone with a 3-1 victory for us.
I'll take that.
Does it go straight to penalties, or is there extra time in this cup?
I think it does go to extra time based off, because we played them in extra time in this tournament 2-3 years ago, I think it was. And that definitely went to extra time, because that was when
Charles scored.
Neve Charles scored right at the end to take it to extra time. And then Sophie bulleted one in with her left foot during the extra time period. So I think there is extra time.
Yeah, well, I've written them down. Not that you win anything, but I will shout it out on the next show if anyone gets it right. And we've got Johnny on mixed with a 2-1 to Chelsea. I suppose if it goes to Chelsea, it doesn't matter what way. The win comes, we'll take it, of course. Sadly, that is all we've got time for tonight. We will be back on Friday with somebody to look back at this Man City game and ahead to Everton in the FA Cup. Dane, good to see you, mate. And I'll see you Friday as well.
Yeah. I've scheduled myself in. I've committed myself. So, yeah, definitely. It's nice sharing the stage again with Rich, and it's lovely to see Clayton, who I haven't seen for a long time. I've enjoyed it tonight.
Yeah, been a good show. Rich, thanks for joining us, and good to see you again as well.
Yeah, good to see you again. Same to Dane, and yeah, nice to meet Clayton, who I haven't previously met. So, yeah, good to have a nice chat about a pretty good win for the Chelsea women.
Yeah, absolutely. Clayton, always a pleasure to have you on the show and share your extensive knowledge on the game.
Very nice of you to ask me, and really enjoyed it. And a mutual thanks to Rich, not met him before, so it was good to share some airtime or whatever we call this, pod time. And I'll hopefully see you at a game.
Yeah, maybe we could do something for the Champions League semi-final where we all sit together. And we've got to buy tickets, I suppose, when we get there.
Yeah.
Might get down to a game.
That'll be good.
Yeah, there we go.
Looking forward to that.
Well, actually, I've got one last question because it really interests me and it's an important question just because of the drivel I sometimes drink at Stamford Bridge. So when Rich said he missed a few goals going to the toilet and to get some alcohol, what was the chosen pint at Leicester?
It was Chang, which I think was there last season. And obviously it used to be... I mostly associate that beer with Everton because it used to be Everton's sponsor for years in the I only had one Chang.
was it better than the Singer?
I think there was, yeah. although I don't know, the last few times I've been to the Bridge and had Singer, I don't know, it hasn't been as bad. I don't know, it used to be really, really gassy, and either I've built up a massive tolerance towards it, or it's not as bad as what it was before. I don't know. I don't know if anyone else feels like this.
No, I think it's still quite gassy.
Yeah, there you go then. Tolerance. It does sort of taste, you know, and you kind of get like a sort of similar, similar feel to it. But yeah, I only had one there. I usually drink Guinness, but they didn't have it in the ground. So
interesting.
Yeah. I think they had a cider and an IPA as well, but I can't remember what those were.
Yeah, good job you're here, Dan. That's an important question. Ping Power Stadium will certainly come in handy for this podcast going forward. Now, if you do like what we do, aside from that, please make sure to join us on Patreon for just £5 a month. You can help support the show, continue to create content, do things like Mixlr and a Zoom without having to log on and off, and to edit the show and pull it out. It all costs money. So the more we can get a little bit of help with that, and any extra goes towards our Future Ballers campaign in the summer as well. The link for all that will be in the description box. Thanks for listening. Until next time, from Kings Meadow to Wembley, keep the blue flag flying high.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.